This is a speed panel, which means you guys are supposed to be speedy. But you have 5 minutes to be speedy. And the best part about it is we want to get to know you, to get to know what your firm is, what you're doing, what type of investor you are, whether you're a single family office, whether you have a fund, a firm, what you're doing that way. We also want to know what you typically invest in, whether that's real estate, cryptocurrency, whether that's debt, any of those things. But then we also want to know what your preferred investment structures. Now we have a few different questions. So in case you're like, oh, we can fly through one, two, three, keep going the other so we can dig in a little bit more. Because the whole point is we want the full 5 minutes to actually get to know what you're doing with your fund, with your family office, or things that way. We also want to know what's the number one type of investment that you're actually looking for. So whether it's from people in the room, whether it's from ones you're looking to invest in your current portfolio, or just in the future, we want to know those things. And then also, what's your number one most valuable $1 million insight that you can provide? So what can you do to give us, and if it's a $1 billion one, even better. Yeah? So we have our four different panelists up here. We have 5 minutes each. If you look in front of you, we have that panel, we have that timer going just so you can stay on track. We'll ping pong around a bit for the order, but why don't we do this? Ken, could you actually go first for us?
I guess I have to now.
Oh, and there should be a microphone on your seat. Oh, there you go.
So, I can't remember all those questions. Maybe you could when I was a lot younger, but
I'll help you.
I'll just go through a few things. One is I have a long career in corporate finance, CFO of a number of companies, including Yahoo, Siebel, Fortinet, and so forth. The only reason I bring that up is I did have, probably why I got invited here, besides local, I ran the family office for Eric Schmidt for 5 years called Hillspire. It's all public. He's worth about $20 billion. In many of the investments there were large funds, large via private equity, large via hedge funds, real estate, and so forth. I left there at the end of last year. I run my own family office. I'm very, very heavy in privates, alternatives, not so much in hedge funds, but more in venture capital, and we can talk about that when we talk about secondaries. So I've been in venture capital now for almost 30 years. Private equity funds, private real estate funds as well. I sometimes invest directly in companies. I'm involved in a number of public, private, nonprofit boards. Happen to be an investor in the Golden State Warriors. Happen to like kiteboarding and skiing. And I'll go from there. That was as much as I wanted to talk in my first 2 minutes. Now you can ask questions.
All right. Well, how about you talked about investing in private companies and even for some of the other work they do in the VC space. What type of investment structures do you primarily look for or primarily use or try to push for when you're using any of those different?
I think, in venture, sometimes it's you know, where you have knowledge of the people. And I had this discussion earlier today in another conference I was at. To me, a lot of it is trust. I don't particularly do a lot of diligence. I don't have to because I represent myself, so to speak. So to me, it's always a first degree of knowledge in terms of knowing the people I'm investing in. And so I've gotten to a lot of very good funds directly, whether it's Kleiner Perkins, Benchmark, Sequoia, and so forth. I've learned unless you ask, you don't get. The nice thing about being part of Hillspire, sometimes funds would come like Clayton DeBilly or CDR, I'd say it easier to say, come or Insight Ventures come to see me. They want to see if Hillspire would invest. General Atlantic is another one. Blackstone is another one. Sometimes we did, sometimes we didn't. But in many cases, I would ask if I could go in myself, which I did. And more often than not, I got a yes. And I would just say, when we talk about this conference here, and I'm on the Citigroup Advisory Board for Wealth Management, so in the family office, so we actually have a meeting coming up in Europe. And what I've learned, having been involved in this industry, there is trillions and trillions of dollars running now by family offices. And what I've seen is the major institutions now, instead of just going to the pension funds, school endowments, I happen to be on the private equity subcommittee for Cornell because I went to Cornell as a trustee there. But instead of just going to schools, endowments, pension funds, whatever, they now realize there's trillions of dollars in either family offices or high net worth individuals. And so they're all addressing that market. And so it's incredible. And basically every Tom, Dick, and Harry now has their own family office. I actually created one called Maya Capital for myself now. That's actually named after my granddaughter. So I see that. And so I happen to... I think in today's world, I just say it this way, I think venture is, we can cover this when we talk about secondaries. Venture has a lot of challenges right now. I'll cover that more later. I think private equity, even with higher interest rates, the model still works. I'm actually going in Silver Lake as we speak. They're in the process of finishing up raising Fund 7 right now. I've been in all their funds. And by the way, that's one of my things. I stay in funds generally if they're doing reasonably well. So I'm loyal on both sides where they're loyal to me. I'm doing H&F as we speak as well. So there's a lot of fundraising still going on. But I think you can be very, you can and probably should be very, very selective right now.
I've actually got a question for you.
Oh, yeah? What's your question, Brett?
Panel's asking another panel. Yeah.
No, it's good. What's the question, Brett?
You can hit me, too.
How has deal flow changed for you in deal sourcing, or has it, being at Hillspire, you know, where you've got a huge bank account behind you versus now having your own, you know, your own show? Has it had any real differences?
Yes. It probably increased it fivefold, yeah. because people... You know, interesting enough, I'm very approachable. You may not see it from here, but I am very approachable. So sometimes it was easier to see me and people know me than see Chuck Chai, who manages our investments there. And so they would come to see me to get to Chuck. He, more often than not, it didn't fit in his in terms of what he wanted to do, in terms of how he's measured. So that's that's how I got. You know, I used to go in Blackstone and some other funds through an intermediary, whether it was Merrill Lynch or J.P. Morgan or Morgan Stanley, whatever, and now I found I was able to go in directly because they found me. and these are very good funds, CDR. Sometimes, CDR, I happened to go to a conference in New York. I met the guy who heads up II, Investor Relations, I should say. And I just asked him ahead. I know some of the people there. Can I get in? And he said, yes. So my comment generally is, if you don't ask, you don't get. And if you'd be surprised when you ask how often there's a yes behind it.
Yeah. No, great question, great answer. All right, let's give him a little round of applause, though. Thank you very much. All right, let's move over. Richard, we met you a little bit before. I know you talked a little bit on some of the other panels. Maybe if you can go a little bit deeper into some of those topics, but we'll go to you next.
Yeah, sure. So Richard Wilson, founder of Family Office Club. I'm just going to go through some of the mandates we're looking for to fill for either top clients or top-of-mind clients we're working on right now. We've got a manufacturing client that's going through a $100 million exit, so looking for more manufacturing businesses to invest in. It's not something you hear on stage here a ton, so I'd love to be sourcing those for them. We've got a bath products company that's looking to acquire other smaller bath product companies or private label manufacturers. They're based out of Kentucky, so that would be of interest. We're trying to get ahead on things because there was 22-year-old kids up here on stage. All the gray-haired real estate people laughed them off stage because they talked about crypto. Those people are all on a beach. They're not here today. And so I don't want to be the next version of that. I want to be ahead of the curve. So the stuff that everyone in the room thinks is stupid but may become real one day, I'm like paying more attention to. So, you know, sports betting, you know, blew up, got legalized in many states. Cannabis, you know, legalized in many states. I've never bet on sports. I've never done cannabis. Never smoked a cigar. The most boring person to go to dinner with, you can imagine. But those are things that became trends. Those are things that if you get in front of it as an investment, whether you think it's a good or bad thing. So I'm trying to pay attention to like what's going to be next big trends. Psilocybin is now not illegal. I believe it is in 14 states. 3 years ago, I think it was 2 states. That's one that is not mainstream yet at all, but here in San Francisco is much more so than many other cities. So that's one trend. So last year I made an allocation, acquired 5% of a company in that niche. And again, not because of personal use, just because I don't want to laugh at the crypto kids on stage and think they're dumb and regret it a decade later. We have other things that we're looking to source. One thing is that over time we're trying to get involved in over 1,000 acres of land acquisitions. And so a couple of families here in the room who have accomplished that. I'm looking to learn from them and how they put those deals together. So if you're doing a deal with big acreage right now, if it's something that we could help with or give feedback on or something, would love to be part of that, just get smarter in that area. Within our STR portfolio, we're looking for waterfront motels or tourist location motels that have a wedding venue type feature to them. You know, the Airbnb STR space has just been dumped on by people watching too many TikTok videos of Airbnb arbitrage, and they go out and sign a lease and sublet it and put it on Airbnb. And so we need to do something wildly different there to keep that business fun. Number one thing, though, is multi-location profitable medical and dental practices. So if there's only one location, it has to be amazing or has great collateral behind it. Otherwise, really looking for multi-location medical dental. Could be oncology, dermatology, med spas, dental clinics, where we have a lot of momentum right now, pain clinics, primary care, we have momentum in. And so that's the where we spend most of our time. Hospitality assets, we were able to source from this room two portfolios of Marriotts from two different family office club members for a third family office club member. And so in total, those are probably $400 million worth of hotels, and we'd love to source more portfolios. So if you have a hospitality asset and you'd be willing to potentially contribute it to a larger platform that's trying to go public, then would love to be part of that and help contribute to it. We've got a collector of biking memorabilia next to me who is on the official United States cycling team at one point. Some people collect bottles of wine. I collect domain names. I have 786 domain names, probably about 700 too many, but that's just something personal about me. And based out of Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm not sure if I missed one or two things, like the million-dollar question, I guess.
Yeah, and also if there's a particular structure that you look for, maybe that hasn't been mentioned, but then also what's a $1 million insight that someone could actually take action on here today. So,
sure. I think most people in here already know I really like gross revenue royalty deals, so I don't need to flog that any further probably. But in addition to that, just a simple question, you know, is there any collateral I could put behind my deal when I invest for equity? So many times we get a yes, and it wasn't offered in the beginning, but being able to put medical equipment, insurance receivables, a piece of real estate that the medical practice owns, real estate that the medical practice owners own, but in a different LLC that wasn't brought up in the conversation, and now your downside is severely limited, and you may have the exact same upside. Sometimes they'll say, okay, well, take a tiny haircut on the upside, and we're willing to do this, or invest more, and we'll give you the collateral. But so many times investors never ask, and if they did, they would maybe really protect themselves. So that would be my structure answer. And then on the million-dollar insight, I think it would be that if you're not ever seeing deals exclusively first and at a better valuation than other people, then you're not growing your balance sheet very quickly. You're going to grow it linearly and not exponentially. And if you can see deals first exclusively and get a better valuation, then the results really compound drastically. And so that's why you have to choose one or two niche games and get really good at it, or you'll never be known as the person who's going to add the most strategic value, and you'll never see the deals first. You'll just hear about them in a room of 700 people only, and someone's not going to think to come up to you at the next event before the event even starts and tell you about a deal. You saw in the last panel, they joked about, no, show me, you know, talk to me first if you have that deal. Because when you see it first, you make friends quickly. Like I got a text message from someone selling their business for $150 million yesterday. 3 minutes later, I responded. 8 minutes after that, we were on a phone call. And during lunchtime, I was outside and we had an hour-long call about setting up their family office. I'm right on top of that lead, no matter what I'm doing or where I am in the world. And if you're not doing that, and if that opportunity comes to you and you're like, I'm running an event, I'll call them next week. Let's set up a call for 2 weeks from now. Somebody else who's more passionate or on top of their game is going to eat up that lead, develop the relationship, fly out there, close them before you've even responded to the email. So that'd be my million-dollar insight.
Yeah, no, that's great. All right, little round of applause. Thank you, Richard. All right. Why don't we hop right back over here. Jerry, how about you go next for us, introduce yourself, and we can go through those questions.
We are a multifamily office. We serve primarily business owners and their families because, as we've discussed and as you've seen in the conference, business owners are great creators of wealth and employment in our countries. We have been in existence for about 12 to 13 years. We have a background in the trust and estate industry. I'm a lawyer by training and learned the principles of wealth management in the trust industry, and over time gravitated to portfolio management and asset management, vis-a-vis the CFA program. We participate in the Family Wealth Report awards, usually held in New York City. We've won several awards in that category in terms of alternative investments and best overall family office. And I would say our claim to fame, at least in our parts, is the the use and adoption, early adoption and investment of alternative asset classes. And of course, alternative asset classes are not so alternative anymore. They're being offered largely in the mainstream. But at the end of the day, our clients on a portfolio basis have been exposed and are exposed from everything starting with private real estate to private debt, both corporate and real estate oriented, private equity, especially on the tech side. Most recently, we've taken a position in Bitcoin, and I was actually going to ask, was crypto just not on the agenda this time, or?
So I've got 120 tokens I've invested in, and most of them just stupid stuff that probably turn into nothing. And then Bitcoin is my favorite, and with the halving coming up end of April, I think that Bitcoin will outperform many things discussed on stage over the next 9 months.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the one thing we work with the manager in Canada who was one of the first managers, 3IQ, to initiate a publicly licensed crypto fund. And to get it past the regulators, they initially had to start with Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin to show some kind of diversification within the fund. But as soon as we could, we switched our clients to direct Bitcoin holdings through a Bitcoin ETF, which is the most sensible approach. So talking about business owners, our structure, we're again registered as a portfolio manager, similar to some other firms here, so the equivalent of an RIA. And we do that because typical family office and business owners, simple example of course is you have a liquidity event, the owner makes their first major sale, they want to take money off the table and say, here, please invest this for me, don't make me poor, which is the, you know, the original refrain, right, usual refrain. So that leads to elements of diversification, and again, as a portfolio manager, we have the responsibility to diversify them. But being entrepreneurs, very quickly they come back to you and say, yeah, I've got this really interesting project, that money I gave to you, I kind of need back, right? So what we've done, and I think a number of firms have done this, is we incorporate our clients' objectives, obviously, into that portfolio mix. So where we look for diversification on public securities, private securities, and ultimately even individual deals, we want to have that continuum because it's the normal course with business owners and entrepreneurs. And of course, that's just a very, you know, simple example. When you start managing money for established families, the issue is more multiple objectives, right? So when you're looking at questions of liquidity, cash flow, growth, you have to balance all those different pots of money which families usually have in play for different objectives. And just for the last part of my time, I don't know if my compatriot from West Virginia is here, but I'm from an oil and gas producing region, so I'm going to take one more swing at energy. And the way I would approach it is going back to, again, another theme which really struck a chord with me, is the notion of entrepreneurs and problems, right? Like, why are you setting out to make an investment? What's your objective? What's the problem you're trying to solve? And I can tell you, in Alberta, in the oil and gas industry, even the most veteran-hardened oil and gas driller understands the threat of climate change. How big or how small, that's open for debate. But those individuals are working to accommodate that issue, that problem, and at the same time deal with the competing problem of energy demand, which is here to stay, and oil and gas is a part of that. So we are looking at a spectrum of energy investments. We have an overweight generally or globally across our portfolios, but we are looking, at a, let's say a mix of energy, starting with natural gas, because liquefied natural gas projects are going ahead, but those are generally at the public company or infrastructure level. There are a number of junior gas explorers who are kind of stranded still in the various shale regions of North America. So there are opportunities for investment and mergers and acquisitions. And then moving to the renewables side, you know, we're looking at carbon capture, which is more at a sort of a plant level at this point, like manufacturing level, associated with a generating plant or power station, something like that. And then the one that really tickles my fancy is geothermal. Western Canada, Western United States has been thoroughly punched full of holes in terms of exploration, right? And engineers intimately know the geology of Western United States, Western Canada. And the ability to put geothermal projects in place is actually very compelling. The problem of scalability and the technology just isn't quite there. But when it goes from limited partner investments all the way down to direct investment, we have clients with our support who are involved in private companies trying to bring geothermal to reality. So that's where I stand.
I love it. Everyone, let's give a little round of applause to Jerry over here. Thank you very much for sharing. Now, we heard a little bit about perhaps some of your investments that you have in that bike space and your professional history, but Brett, why don't you finish us off today, last but not least?
Certainly. So I work with Paris-Roubaix. I'm the chief investment officer. It's a single family office, U.S.-based global family. The family is from the Midwest. I live here in San Francisco, and I always get the question, well, why aren't you living in the Midwest? Which is followed by, because for roughly 6 months of the year, the weather blows. So I really prefer staying here and going out in a pine box eventually. With the family, the origination of the wealth, this is all post-World War II money that was made in real estate, predominantly multifamily, and when there was an exodus out of major cities like New York, San Francisco, LA, out the fleeing to the suburbs. Family is going in and buying doors for $25,000 a door in Manhattan, and they never sell anything. So imagine rolling it up to today, and you're now collecting $60,000 to $70,000 a year in rent, and pull out a calculator, and you go, you own a few thousand doors, what that does for your cash flow. And then the other thing is manufacturing. And if you look at that to this day, being that's really what drives the bus. We're not the family that made it publicly. The family is, everything was made privately. There has yet to be any, we're selling everything and turning us into an investment company. So the portion of the wealth that I manage, and that would not be including all the opcos, so I have a little over $6.5 billion is my day-to-day. And there's a big difference between myself and Jerry, where you're at a multifamily, you know, RIA, that type of structure, that you have a whole lot of people that you'll piss off day to day. I only have one. So it changes the marching orders. And then also, I think a huge advantage that a single family office has when you're not in that RIA structure, I don't have to be registered. And because we have opcos in every continent but Antarctica, the deal flow we get is just off the charts. Because family offices, I've told multiple people here, I find family offices to be so damn lazy, they just sit back and wait for deals to come to them. If you put a little bit of effort into it, it's just astounding what can come your way. And by the way, if you want to be another family office's best friend, get them damn deals. It makes it just like a fund manager. You want to be a fund manager's best friend, get them allocations. And it works. And to that end, what we're looking at right now is we've been war chesting money for the real estate market. Yep. People think, well, why the hell would you do that with vacancy rates where they're at, interest rates where they're at? One, we're a cash buyer. Two, my marching orders are, my investment horizon is 25 years to the rest of forever. So I can look at something, I'm fine with a 50% vacancy factor in a building if we can get the numbers right. And so we've been marshaling up, setting up cash. We tied up lines of credits that were long-term lines a few years back. So I've got at my disposal roughly $8 billion to spend. And it's only been recently starting to see the cracks. And it's already happening in New York because all this paper is really the piper's, it's coming due.
Do you have a geographic location, though, that you're looking for anyone that wants to send you those and become your best friend?
It would be on the planet.
Okay, perfect. No, so only in the U.S., or you're fine overseas?
Oh, no. Yeah, not the moon. That's sketchy.
No, good to know.
No, but like one way that we do for co-invest. So we do a lot of co-invest. Now, I'm not going to look to another family to invest in our deals because we'll just buy it. Mm-hmm. But a family may have a great deal and they don't have the cash to do the whole thing. I have no problem. What I don't like doing is investing in a fund.
Gotcha. So
if I look at a lot of particularly, you know, all of us probably have money in one way or another in a private equity fund and some sort of thing. It just pisses me off to no end when it comes time to marking, you know, because these marks I'm looking at, no, we're a single family. We do our own marks. Mm-hmm. And it seems like these funds, they really go up quickly and then they just hold them. And, dude, it is 30% off of that. You're not even close to the secondaries. So it really creates problems for the multifamily, the IRA, the pension. They can't second guess those marks.
Okay.
But it's not a reflection of actual value.
No, that makes sense. I guess since we only have a few more seconds left, what's like $1 million or in your case, an $8 billion piece of advice you could give the audience this way that they'd be able to act on?
Well, I think as I've heard everybody else yapping, I think in our case, an executable is it's not spending your money right now. If you've got cash, you have, and it's not a quick flip. That's not the ethos of how I work, but it's more, what is a better long-term use? Long-term use is building that cash reserve so that you can execute, not if, it's when that bloodletting starts happening in the not too distant future. So instead of you're buying a huge skyscraper, you're buying a strip mall in Bakersfield. Whatever it is, there's opportunities at that economic spectrum because I can't buy that strip mall in Bakersfield because it falls out of how we invest. But there is certainly opportunity coming down that's going to give you a window that's going to last a lot longer than you setting on dead cash for another 18 months.
Can I add? I'm going to add a couple things quickly.
No, please. Thank you, Ken.
You know, I think some folks can do directs, but you have to know what you're doing. You know, we did both at Hillspire and myself a lot of funds. I think I would just say very quickly, in funds, hedge funds are very troubled right now, tend to lag. Venture is all about the funds you get into. The dispersion of returns is tremendous. Private equity, not nearly as dispersion. I have actually seen the funds that I'm in private equity, when they sell deals, are actually above their NAV. So I think private equity generally is more realistic, both in the upside and downside. Real estate funds, I'd say the same thing. I'm in a bunch of those. It's all about the funds you get into. The one last thing that I think is actually a little actionable here. Interesting enough, you know, I'll just give one example. I've never been in Tom or Bravo, which is a great tech fund. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry fund now has a credit fund. It's unbelievable. So sometimes the way you get into funds that you want to get into is you find out what they're currently raising, and if it's consistent with the area you like, you go into it. So I just happen to go into a Thoma Bravo, their credit fund, because I know now it gets me into their main fund. And as I sit here, I'm getting Wover actions as we speak here. So it's amazing the activity here in Wover as we in this room here.
I love it. Well, everyone, let's give Jerry, Ken, Brett, and Richard a little round of applause.